You're listening to the Yeshiva of Newark podcast. I'm your host and curator, Rabbi Avram Kivalevich, and I hope you enjoy this episode. With downloads approaching the million mark and an archival library numbering in the thousands, the Yeshiva of Newark podcast has been striving to continuously upgrade our content, professionalize our audio sound, along with altering approaches in light of much appreciated listener feedback. I firmly believe the niche has been carved out that resonates with many on the wide spectrum of observant Jews. This explains why we continually rank high in independent online lists of top yeshiva podcasts. That proud edifice is in real danger of toppling and disappearing. We need the help of our listeners to continue to record and edit, to promote a product that has been a balm and instructor to so many. Just $36. As a minimum donation from 1,000 of you out there will keep us afloat as a Newark of straight, intelligent, humorous discussion, lectures, debate, and inquiry, while the destructive waters of ignorance and identity politics, cyberbullying, crash around us. Your generous contributions will seal and galvanize this ark till it comes to a satisfying rest in an era of Moyer Tzdeya, heralding Mashiach, B'mheira, B'yameinu, Amen.
Is Bikra Cholim for someone who is in a coma or in a vegetative state. And they quote Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein. He says, a well-known posik in Bnei Brak. Now, it's true, Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein is very well-known. His svarim are some of the most popular svarim that are printed. Vaharivna, many people might have heard of them. Many of them have been translated into English. It's become a favorite for people to use at the Shabbos table. The Sefer Chashukei Chemed, which is was collected from his other writings and then connected to the Shas, so you can find it on the Bar Ilan CD. This, however, this piece found itself originally in the Sefer Shiurim, Shiurei Torah Rofim. Rav Zilberstein, as the Rav of Cholon, and as a very energetic and competent speaker who knew how to make things interesting, started giving Shiurim to doctors. And I suppose tapes were made of these Shiurim. And eventually, I was talking to Richard earlier today that this is a term that when you hear about it, it's sort of, we bristle at it today. Today we would say the person is disabled, the person is, I don't know, handicapped in a certain way. But this was the term. He's a vegetable. He's a tzemach. He's a vegetable. They have him in bed, but as far as the doctors around him are saying, he doesn't hear you, he doesn't see you. Perhaps they've even attached to his head, to his skull, various electrodes, and maybe there's readings that they could perhaps perceive whether he's actually recognizing something, and they can tell you, we've done the tests. There's the brain function. We don't believe that the brain is lighting up. They say he's finished. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that they know that they see that the brainstem has been severed, that they see that there's been a cut through trauma. And when that occurs, then you could probably assume that they're right, that this thing is not going to magically reconnect itself. But now the question is, it's very painful. The question was on the children. Should the children, and by extension anyone, is there any inyan of going to be mavaker this person? So we all know that from our previous classes that Bikur Cholim has three parts that have been developed by the Rishonim and distilled into halacha, And one of it is the Yishuv Hada'as of the Chola. The other is the needs of the Chola, the physical needs, how things can be helped. And the third is to be able to be inspired to daven, to pray for the Chola. So, he says it would seem, so what are you gaining here? You should probably make sure that it is a, and again, we talked about if you don't show up, there's going to be a pretty wicked Yetzer Hara, so to speak, on the part of the health workers to not even care about his continued life. So that would be something. If you assume that the people there are taking great care, that they believe in the sanctity of human life, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. So is there any reason to go? And as we mentioned last week, from the Chassam Sofer said sometimes doctors are wrong about Jews, right? And I mentioned last week that, yes, the Jewish body might be something different. It's not doesn't just house animation, but it houses a supernatural soul that is somehow a part of God himself. But if it's a miracle for the brainstem or that part to become reconstructed, isn't that something that's a nes godel? Isn't that something that's not natural at all? And it gets into the question, are you supposed to pray for outright miracles? But he says, I still think there's a mitzvah to come to be mevaker this person. We know that one of the sources that Bikur Cholim can be considered a mitzvah, especially according to the Bahag, is from the fact that it's imitatio Dei. We mentioned a number of weeks ago that the Rambam criticizes the Bahag for counting Bikur Cholim as a mitzvah. And he believes that the Bahag's basis was based on the drosha from the Pasuk in Parshas Yisro that said that Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to teach to the Bnei Yisro es haderech yelchu bo, es ha-maisa that he knew, that said, v'hodata lachem, Moshe, you'll tell them, Yisro said, zebeis chayehem. So there's two different Rashis. One Rashi says this means learning, and one Rashi says that this means work, to go out and work. Es haderech, that's gemilas chasodim, is called a derech. Yehu is bikur cholim, because it usually implies traveling to where the chola is, ba zukvura. As hamaisa is din, asher yasun zelifnim mishuras hadin. Because you don't have to say asher yasun means that you have to go even further. So the Rambam said, it's clear that this is only an asmachta. That's the Rambam's point against the Bahag. It's clear that this is, who do you really think this is the mitzvah of kvura? Ba zukvura in it? Because it's going in the ground? And from yelchu, you have to know, says the Rambam, criticizing the Bahag, that you have to know when there's a drash and when it's a real extraction from the pshat and the pasuk. That's the Rambam's criticism. He almost can't believe that a person as great as the Bahag, assuming he actually was the one who put together that list of mitzvos that are beginning of the Sefer. Now, the Ramban feels that the Rambam has jumped on the Bahag incorrectly, because really the Bahag source is not from this pasuk, but it's really based on some sort of drash. It's based on the pasuk that says you need to act like God, you need to be dovek in God. How you dovek in God? You learn from things that God did. You understand, you learn the Torah, and as much as it's clearly not a human act, it's an act that's of God that's conveyed in certain terms, that we translate them in the way we do things. So it's imitatio Dei, Dveikus in God, Achrei Hashem Elokim Teilchu. And therefore, it's closer. It's not just some sort of, disconnected drash to the Pasuk. It has to do with Dveikus and Hashem acting like God. So the Gemara in Sota that is more the source of the Bahag than the Gemara in Baba Kama gives examples of God being involved in these type of chasodim. And one of the examples that is given is that God came to be Mavakir Chola to Avram Avinu. That God came to be Mavakir Chola to Avram Avinu. Where's that? In the beginning of Parshas Vayera. Right? He comes to be Mavakir Chola Avram. So here, last 2 weeks ago, we quoted Rav Moshe Feinstein. Here, Rav Zilberstein quotes Rav Moshe Feinstein, not from the Tshuvas Rav Moshe, but from his Drash Sefer. Now, I have to tell you, one of the things that makes Rav Zilberstein so unique as a posek is that he quotes from a lot of non-halachic material and builds halachic principles from them. Here's an example. Rav Moshe Sefer Drash Moshe, which I just recently bought, just about a year ago. It says, Rav Moshe is Madayik from the Pasuk. It says, Vayaru Hashem, but we don't know why God was there, right? It says that God appears to Avraham, but for what purpose? Doesn't say he said anything. So that's how Chazal, Rav Moshe says, under new, that is, Levakir Esachola, he must just being there. So therefore, Rav Moshe, and it's interesting because we saw Rav Moshe 2 weeks ago, was responding to the Chechen Dover, who was talking about being Mekayim the mitzvah through the telephone. And Rav Moshe says, you're not Mekayim the mitzvah. You have to do it if that's your only way of connecting, but it's not a kiyum mitzvah. You're mechuyev to do as much as you can, and even if you can't do everything, that doesn't mean you don't do anything. So Rav Moshe here says something a little bit different. He says that we see from God's Bikur Cholim, God's Bikur Cholim was in a way that there wasn't a fulfillment of the other two things. This is not a template for making sure he's better or davening. God doesn't have to make a special prophetic, God does not have to impose a prophetic experience on Avram to know if Avram is sick or not, to go see, how's he doing, or to somehow daven for him. Daven for him, he's God. He's not going to daven to himself. So Rav Moshe says, you see from here, if that's the template of Bikur Cholim, that the Ramban says is the source of the Bahag calling Bikur Cholim a mitzvah from the Torah, following God, well, when God comes to Mavakir Chola, what is it? So you see that, right? So he doesn't need to have a special Gili Ashkina to heal him. So you see from here that Bikur Cholim works or should be done. Those reasons are not, and this is, are not the whole complete parts of the mitzvah. Bikur Cholim is to fulfill 1, 2, and 3. But even if you cannot fulfill all three, even, because one of the things, as the Ramban said, was for the Chola to know he's not alone, to know that the Chola feels connected, that his people there, that his illness has not brought him into a place beyond the pale. Well, the person in the vegetative state doesn't know that. He doesn't sense the person is there. So therefore, Rav Zilberstein uses Rav Moshe to say that Bikur Cholim, even when it doesn't seem to be fulfilling any of the requisite purposes that the Rishonim articulate, it's still a mitzvah. Because, basically, anytime we come up with a rationale for a mitzvah, the mitzvah needs to be done despite the rationale. There is this idea of obedience to God no matter what. So therefore, he says, you can't say, I'm not going to do Bikur Cholim because he doesn't need me. And I'll just, now. Now he says, based on this, he says, now we can understand the Gemara in Nedarim that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, where the student of Rabbi Akiva was not visited by any of the other students. Rabbi Akiva came. Why didn't the other students come? Now remember, I sort of implied maybe this is sort of like another proof that the students of Rabbi Akiva had a lot to learn, and maybe they were not as involved in chesed as they should be. Because there was somebody officially taking care of this chola. And therefore, they didn't think there was, and he's sitting there, so we don't have to do it. And Rabbi Akiva, so why did Rabbi Akiva go? So Rabbi Akiva went because Rabbi Akiva held up Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. That the way he's explaining Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, the Bikur Cholim you have to do even if none of the three parts of Bikur Cholim are able to be fulfilled. But then it turned out that Rabbi Akiva saw that the guy who was supposedly in charge of keeping the place clean, it wasn't clean. And Rabbi Akiva himself got down on his knees or told the people that were with him to go and clean the place up. He says, if you don't say that, how could it be that people did not visit a sick person? Okay. So now then Rav Zilberstein says, well, you know, even though he quotes Rav Moshe Feinstein in Rav Moshe's Sefer on Chumash, the truth is one of the reasons of the Ramban seems to be correct by God, right? In other words, to me, that the Chola should know that there's someone who's he's connected to, Nachas Ruach. Obviously, Avraham Avinu would have Nachas Ruach getting a prophetic vision from God. And Rav Zilberstein says he was giving him some support. Now, Zilberstein then quotes a question in Hilchos Talmud Torah. Let's say there is a blind Talmud Chacham, and he's not aware of the people around him. He maybe hears, you know, the vague stepping, but he can't tell what's really going on. So do you need to stand up for him if he can't register that? So they bring a raya from the Gemara in Kedushin that when Rabbi Yosef would just hear the footsteps of his mother, he would already stand up because he would say, I got to stand up for the Shechina. The mother wasn't there, but he heard her footfalls. So you see, similarly, by a blind person who doesn't see you, but you're doing it with covet that person. So even though she didn't see what was going on, so the... and again, this is Rav Zilberstein's connection. Maybe the same way you could bring a raya from Rabbi Yosef that you stand up for a blind person, maybe in the same way, even though the person who is in the bed doesn't lacks all understanding that you're around, but you still did it. And again, I don't think it's really a comparable. And if you detect a note of skepticism in my voice, it's because it's there. First of all, you know, I don't think you build things out of Rav Moshe's Sefer on Drush. That's number one. Number two, when you stand up for the Talmud Chacham who's not aware you're standing up with Kavod HaTorah. You're standing up for yourself in a way. You're standing up because you're trying to indicate how great Torah is. So even though that person, you know, doesn't notice you, you're doing it because of that. Now, when he does notice you, so he can tell you, no, I'm moichel. You know, he can be moichel up to a point, right? Because it's not a bezoyon if you don't stand up. So he can't be moichel the bezoyon of Torah. But maybe standing up for a Talmud Chacham, right? So again, you could be machalic between, this and coming to visit someone who has no idea that you're there, but I came to see you. Then he says there's another reason that by coming, the hospital team that is with this person in the vegetative state realizes that he's not just someone that they can treat like a vegetable. Also, now here we get into some interesting speculation. After Nirashakolo, maybe he actually does recognize something. Maybe, and again, I don't know, this is a case where they've taken X-rays or a CAT scan of his brain and they see there's something wrong with the brainstem. Maybe that's not what this is. But they don't know. Shamati mimo rechomi, Maron Agon Rebbe Yoshev, the Yesh Inyan was spal al tzemach. Why? Because even though Rebbe Yoshev did not believe you prayed for miracles, but it still could be, he could be in a better state. He could, perhaps, his situation could get better. It could, he's not going to necessarily be going back completely, but a situation could improve in whatever way God can improve the situation. Then he says, and sometimes we do find that even someone who supposedly was a vegetative in a vegetative state has actually arisen from that illness. It does happen. Okay. And that is where that's Reb Zilberstein's Psak that is quoted not completely, but essentially in Maisa Be'isha Shemizeh Eser Shonim Nivka Rachim. For 10 years, her husband has been incapacitated due to an auto accident. He is considered in a vegetative state. And she is essentially an aguna. The accident occurred soon after their marriage, and therefore she has never had children. This poor woman, who had been so happy, and was davening constantly for gods to save them, to help them. Unfortunately, not only did he was he did he not come out of the coma, but he suffered a heart a his heart stopped beating. So basically, it was not just a heart attack. He's basically he his heartbeat went almost to nothing. So now, the question is, should they save this person? And then Rav Zilberstein turns the question and decides to make it a little more interesting, although that's probably not what happened. Let's say the wife, not the hospital staff, let's say the wife herself is some sort of physician. Should she work on her husband to somehow perform the CPR and attach the heart to some machine to get him his heart beating? Even though by doing that, she will continue to be a living aguna. And she might, by doing this, keeping her husband alive in this state, she's never going to be able to get remarried. He cannot give her a divorce. She's going to be Eishes Ish. And if he does eventually succumb to the illnesses that are surrounding him, she'll be too old to get married and to have children. That was the question that Rav Zilberstein was dealing with. So he says it's obvious that You have to do whatever you can to keep that guy alive. The Torah says, well, samaro damarecho. Doesn't say somebody who happens to be with his full mental faculties. Any Jew. Now, you could say, as far as we're looking at, and our eyes are ktsoros haraos, apshaleinenu ktsorot haraot, our eyes that are so short-sighted, it looks like vivifying this man whose heart seems to have given out isn't an act of kindness, but it's an act of cruelty to his poor wife. Once again, we can't start using these considerations. We can't just say, well, let this guy die, because by him dying, now his wife can have a life. It's true. The wife is suffering. But don't we believe in a good God? And God commands in his mitzvos? And clearly, God recognizes in this woman's ledger the pain and the mesiras nefesh that she's had to help her husband. And you have to say that the good and gracious God who commanded this, that this is for the best for her. Okay. Rav Zilberstein turned to the ultimate poisik in medical issues, Rav Waldenberg. Rav Waldenberg wrote him about this case. He says, young man, you answered properly, Zilberstein. You were right. Keep the guy alive. Because we have to do whatever we can to keep people that are paralyzed partially or completely, even the ones that have now been given the title PVS, the persistent vegetative state. Because we don't really have a way to measure their quality of what life is. Even though that is the standard medical terminology and ethics of medicine today, Rav Waldenberg says that's not our perspective of quality of life. If it is actual living, breathing life, no matter what it is, that is called a nefesh, called nefesh. You cannot harm the nefesh. And it doesn't make a difference, said Rav Waldenberg, writing to Zilberstein, that he's not able to eat or to drink. And the only way he can be fed is through a tube that is inserted down his throat or somewhere. And that he doesn't seem to externally react. And then Rav Zilberstein says the following. And again, I don't know what he would say if the CAT scan revealed that that part of the brain was severed, the brainstem was damaged. But let's say that wasn't the case. Then he says the following, and you guys can chime in if you believe this is true. Rav Waldenberg said, "Ani madgish. Outwardly, we don't see anything. Ki shamati mipirofim she'ein lahavchen v'lekvoa." He says, I already heard, I've spoken to doctors. Doctors have said to me, actually, we don't know if deep inside he's not really feeling anything or trying to react. He just doesn't have the wherewithal to show that in many cases. There's been a disconnect that doesn't allow his mind to connect to the nerves that are somehow responsible for moving parts of his body to tell people that he knows what's going on. And for sure that there are persons that are called vegetative, that they can sense something, that there are some small feelings that they can pick up, and they can tell us. We don't think that his brain is completely horus lagamri. And then, once again, Rav Zilberstein says he repeats what we saw earlier, that I've heard, I've read situations that people that were in a coma vegetative state, even for years, actually woke up from this long sleep, and they actually was restored to their limbs the ability to work, and they came back to understanding. They were even able to get up from their beds. And even though those are in very, perhaps, unusual or percentage-wise, a very small percentage of cases, Rav Waldenberg telling Rav Zilberstein, this is our attitude. So I've really expanded this question. It isn't just, do I do Bikur Cholim to a person who is in a vegetative state? How do I look at a person in a vegetative state? What do I assume is their future? What do I assume is their life? What should I do when things get difficult? How active should I be in trying to continue their life? Again, we're not going to get into whether, let's say, they've written a living will. This gets into another question. Can you countermand if it's halacha demands their life to be extended, even though they're saying they don't want their life extended? Here, it's not so simple. But this is all assuming that the person never has told us anything. And again, this is a question where the person has a right. That's another question. Here's another question that was sent to Reb Zilberstein. This was not a husband who was in an accident, but with a preemie child. So the preemie child, they in the hospital, they did what they could to keep this baby alive. But the processes that they used, for example, the baby, they had to pump oxygen into the baby. And sometimes what happens is that there was so much that was pumped in that the baby would have died without being able to breathe. But sometimes too much oxygen got into, was like a bubble went into the child's mind, the brain, and they are able to determine that the child was blinded and suffered some brain damage. Okay. So should we do that? Should we take these measures and turn this newborn into a stilted life again, and to essentially someone whose quality of life, someone who perhaps will, maybe not in a vegetative state, but someone who is super severely limited. So now he quotes Rav Moshe of Zilberstein in the Tshuvos. Here was the case that's in Evan Ezer, and had two children. One of them died before they were two. The other one is already ill with the same disease. She wants to know, should she stop even trying to have children? She still wants to live a sexual life with her husband, but she wants to go on birth control. That's the question. Again, I did not see the tshuva inside. I am sort of trusting Zilberstein here, but let's take a look what he says. Oser, b'fil matirim. We know when as the Gemara in Yavama says, that there are certain women that must use this contraceptive device because it would be a sakana to them to get pregnant. But Rav Moshe said here, there's no sakana to her physically. What's going to happen is she'll birth another child that seems that with similar problems. And Rav Moshe says, it is better to be born than not to be born. Again, remember, that's a little question between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. But Rav Moshe says that it's better to be born, not to be born. Because by being born, even as a child that has to be taken care of and whose lifespan is very limited, you get Olam Haba. So it's good to be born and to live in this limited state, because we believe, Olam Haba, not like the Rambam, that it's based on an intellectual building of the soul through a mind. It has to do with the essence of the soul's existence. If you're born, you go to Olam Haba. So even though Rav Moshe says there is a great tsar for the parents and great effort, you can't therefore give a heter for the woman to use birth control. Okay. So Rav Zilberstein took this tshuva and he says, if Rav Moshe said that, for sure in the case that the baby's alive, that we should try to keep it alive. Because you're not sure. You're not sure what's going to happen. He might actually live, despite limited capacity, but he might actually live quite a bit. Then he quotes a Yerushalmi in Shabbos. This is in the Perek that we'll get to in our Yerushalmi learning, called Rabbi Lezer de Mila, and it has to do with a Mila on Shabbos. And one of the halachos that's discussed is, let's say the baby seems to not have a foreskin. It seems like he's born, like they say about Moshe Rabbeinu and others, that were born without the foreskin. Do you still need to do something? So the Gemara says that you still need to be, you still have to do hatafat tambrit. You still have to, some cow, to extract blood from that spot. And that has a din of a mila. Now, can you do that on Shabbos? A regular foreskin, the Torah does say, can be cut on Shabbos. Yom HaShemini Yom HaBasara L'Zo, whether it's Shabbos or not. But where the baby is born, Mohu, so the Gemara says that you don't do the bris on Shabbos. We quoted this from the Rambam a number of weeks ago, you might remember. So the Gemara says, Ada Barava, though, wanted to fulfill this mitzvah bismano, even though the seeming normative halacha was to wait till the next day, he couldn't find a mohel willing to do it. So he himself took the instrument in hand. Remember, there's no foreskin. And he tried to, let me cut. And what happened, according to one opinion there in the Gemara? One opinion says he actually died. He doesn't quote that opinion. I looked it up earlier. But another opinion, the Gemara says, that what happened with Ada Barabbas' son was he became a cross shva, became impossible, that he'll never be able to have children. A cross shvacha, that the zera wouldn't come out normally. He can never live as a person to have children. Now, the halacha is a cross shvacha cannot marry a Jew. He can marry a Gioris, he can marry possibly like others, but he cannot marry a regular Bas Yisrael. People who have prostate surgery have to worry about the way the prostate surgery is done. They could become krush fachan. Even if they've already married, they can't necessarily live with their wives anymore, whether they're going to have sex with them or not. It's also to be in the state of marriage. So now it turns out that Ada Barava, through his zeal to do this mitzvah, turned his son into a krush facha. The Yerushalmi says that he fasted and davened during his fast, sheyomus, that he should die. Why is he doing that? So Rav Zilberstein says, based on the pshat, that he turned into a child who wasn't able, when he grew up, to ever find a real shidduch and get married. So Rav Ada Barava davened for him to die. Now, Rav David Luria, the great Bucky of the early part of the 19th century, already asked the question that Rav Zilberstein said, wait. There's something he could have done, right? he could still marry a Gioris or a Mamzeres. His life isn't terrible. So here you see someone's davening, according to one opinion, that their son should die because of what the type of life they're going to leave. So this is a question that Rav Zilberstein asks on himself. The Radal, Rav David Luria, says that's the reason why there's another opinion in the Gemara that this didn't happen, that he didn't daven for him to die, but they actually daven for him on children that have a terrible life ahead of them. This wasn't even so terrible. So here, Rav Zilberstein says that Rav Ada, Ha'amora Sheruach Elokim Piyamabo, he's an Amora. He's an Amora that's quoted scores of times throughout Bavli and Yerushalmi. He must not just be a smart fellow who knows how to learn. He is a living agent of God. The Spirit of God probably rang within him. And he knew Shebno Yisvel Sevel Rav. He knew that the purpose of this happening was for the son to suffer. To suffer the difficulties of not finding maybe the right person for him. Why did my son have to suffer? Adabar Rav knew that somehow this was Kaporat Avonot. What Kaporat Avonot? He's just a little baby. He's 8 days old. Ah! Megilgul Kodem. He knew that he was actually a reincarnated person who was brought back into this world as Adabar Rav's son in order to live the difficulty of a life. So, when Adabar Rav fasted and davened for his death, what he really meant was, I know that the reason why you've given me this son is because he contains the soul of a sinner from a previous life. I pray to God that somehow allow him to have the kapara immediately. Allow somehow, and again, how would that happen exactly? He'd have to be in pain? Like somehow God, in his infinite way of measuring, will figure out how the pain that he was supposed to happen shouldn't have to occur during a long lifetime, but let him have this pain now and let him die. And let him finish his life here. You can't say anyone else can say that. Because if you're an Amora, a Tana, oh, you can know what the source of the soul of your child is. But other people cannot. And as he says, David HaMelech says, the dead, can the dead praise God? It must be. This was a unique situation. Now, it's interesting that Rav Zilberstein does not quote the famous Gemara in Bava Metzia about Rabbi Yochanan, who, after the death of his Chaver Resh Lakish that he caused, went into a mental funk and was completely lost his ability to be the teacher he had been. And he was just running, he was walking around moaning over the loss of his great friend who had done so much with him in learning. Lakisha, Lakisha, and the Chachamim had Rachmanis on what was occurring. And they begged God to allow Rabbi Yochanan to die. And that Gemara is quoted often about davening for people to die. Zilberstein doesn't quote that Gemara because that's not relevant to his case. There you're talking about a person who had lived and it was a zilzal to the greatness of Rabbi Yochanan to allow him to continue in a way that people would mock. But here we're talking about a child. So therefore, he feels that this Gemara, this Yerushalmi, feels is connected to our case. What about us? You want to keep these babies alive. Okay, the hospital's doing it, but we're going to have to suffer a whole life with that. So he says, well, first of all, you know, you have Rav Moshe's tshuva. And then he quotes a famous tshuva of the Mari Ben Lev. He said, let's say you're right. Do you have a right to save someone if somebody else is going to suffer because of it? So there was a case of a person who had a lot of protectia, as we say, by the king. Let's call him Reuven. And Shimon happens to be in a situation where the king has discovered that he has a lot of liquor and other stuff, and he's have to pay a huge tax. Okay. Reuven can come and use his protectia and get Shimon off the hook. But Levi, who's the next guy in line with his liquor stores, he's going to have to pay that amount that Shimon would have paid. Is he allowed to Reuven to do what he can to help him? Because Shimon's his friend. So the Mariban Lev said that it depends. If it's already been determined, they've already written out the articles of tax on Shimon, and he's going to somehow get that removed, then he cannot do it. Because that is definitely, then he, right now, the way things are proceeding, Shimon is the one who's going to pay. So you're going to try to upend that and throw it on to the next guy in line, which is Levi, that you can't do. But if it's just generally that you know there's going to be this great tax that's going to be levied, so then it hasn't yet been zeroed in on Shimon, although it looks like he might be it, then you can try to shield Shimon from that, even though it's going to bounce off to someone else. By the way, this tshuva is quoted in the Hakdama to Rav Meisel's Sefer, the Rav in Chicago who survived the Holocaust, when he was dealing, he didn't have any svarim, but he was dealing with a person whose son was earmarked to be taken to the gas chambers. And he had the ability to pay someone else to save his son, but they would take some other child. And he came to Rav Tzvi Hirsch Meisel's to ask this question: can I save him? It's my son. It'll save his life, even though I know it's going to come onto someone else. And Rav Meisel says, I'm not going to paskin the shiloh for you. I don't have svarim. I can't. So he says, that's a psak. You're telling me I can't do it. And that person was besimcha, it was on Rosh Hashanah that happened, that this action happened. He said, Avram Avi, I've been mala like my child to the Akedah, al pi halacha. Halacha is once you're nitfas, you can't, like Shibi ben Vichri, he's the one they ask for. Once, like the Mariban Lev says, once it's already on one person, you can't try to get it off that person, even if it's your own son. Anyway, Rav Zilberstein uses this to say, well, the doctor is sort of like the guy who can go to the king, right? In other words, God has granted him medical expertise. Now, he can say, and what does the doctor need to think? The doctor says, look, I see this baby. If I let the baby die, the baby is crying. The baby wants to breathe. The baby wants to live, even though it's going to be a reduced living. He can't say, well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be cruel. I'm going to forget about you. And basically, even though by not being cruel, it's going to give tsar to the parents, because it's already happened. You can't lift it. Oh, I got to save the parents. Well, you're going to save it, and the parents, you're going to put it, the parents have the child already. So you're going to actively, or at least passively, not get involved and do your duty in order to and see this child who is crying and dying from inability to breathe. Again, I don't think it's a real straight comparison, because again, he's not, but the case that Reuben Lev, he's going out of his way to take the burden from one and put it on the other. Here, he would just not do anything and just, you know, not work with the baby in order that the parents could live a more normal life. Then Rav Zilberstein says parents need to accept that they are not really being hurt. Don't say you're being hurt by having this baby that's going to anchor you to this life that's going to be so difficult. He says, let's say you would have two competitors, Macy's and Gimbel's, and it turned out that Macy's was selling much more than Gimbel's, two big department stores in New York. Now, could Mr. Gimbel go over to the doctor who's treating Mr. Macy and say, don't save him? Do you know if you save him, he's going to run that store and that store is going to put me out of business, or at least going to make all my, I can't have profits because of him? Of course not. Here, this baby has not actively hurting his parents. We need to call a spade, Zilberstein says. They're selfish. They don't want to live, they don't want to live a life anchored to this child. That's why they would want him to die. Now, he says, they don't want this child? Let's go find children's services. Let's go find someone who will. I am sure that among the Jewish people, we will find someone who will raise this child. Bavadu Yanshei Chesed, Yirei Hashem, that will take this child despite the child's severe handicaps. Zilberstein was dealing with a child who was born with muscular dystrophy. And it was so severe in the child that the child couldn't move any of his limbs. And as you know, the muscular dystrophy, it atrophies the insides of the body to a point that they cannot breathe on their own. The parents were wonderful, doing whatever they could. But every little bed sore or anything that the child would get, they would bring the doctors in. They could tell that it was taking its toll on the parents. This is what Dr. Zalman Weintraub was telling Rav Zilberstein. He could tell. And the child himself didn't smile. Something in the eyes, maybe they saw, but they didn't see a regular child who seemed to appreciate life at all. And now the only way the child is going to continue to live is if they put in a respirator. So the respirator will actually breathe on behalf of the child, open up the lungs for the child. So Rav Zilberstein wanted to bring a raya from the Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma says that if a building falls on a person, we clear the bricks and do malachas on Shabbos and create an airway to save the person. In Shulchan Aruch, it says, even if after you've dug, you find that he's been shattered, that there's a blow to his head through the cave-in, and he can only live what's called chaye shah, perhaps an hour or a certain amount of time, you continue to remove the bricks and bring the body out. And you wait until you check his breathing. If the breathing is breathing normally, you machal Shabbos to bring that body out in order that he should live. One of the reasons why we're machal Shabbos for someone is what the Gemara Numa says is, it's worth it for us to machala one Shabbos for there to be many Shabbosos. Well, this person who is going to die, why are we machala Shabbos for this person. Okay. So Zilberstein then says, this question is already asked by the famous Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem of Luants, who wrote his Hagos on the Marshal, the great Marshal's work on the Smag. And he said, this is Zilberstein quoting him, maybe he'll never be able to keep any more Shabbatot. But since the world is based on Rove, he's part of humanity. He's alive in humanity, even though he looks like he's going to die soon. But right now, he's part of humanity. And therefore, he is now part of which part of humanity? This crushed person who probably isn't ever going to wake up, and probably his brain is probably smashed, and he's probably going to die soon. This person is part of the tzaddikim shebedor. He is a tzaddik, and he's saving the world. Sharei eino chote umegen olam, because he can't sin anymore. He's decapacitated, and therefore he's a tzaddik. And therefore, keeping him alive might be keeping the whole generation alive, because we know in God's way of looking at things, there's who's like how many tzaddikim, how many rishoyim. He might be the tzaddik that the world needs. And therefore, because of him, the world is judged much better, and they will keep Shabbosos because of him. I saw this today, and I said, that's wild. What turns this guy into a tzaddik? So what turns him into a tzaddik is because, and therefore, Zilberstein therefore says that a child or anyone who is in a vegetative state has a din of a tzaddik. That is Zilberstein, and he says that in a couple of places, that somebody says it right here. This was a case where an older person with dementia fell and broke his hip, and because he had dementia, the question was, he's already old, he has dementia, should we put him through this pain? So Zilberstein again writes that a person with dementia is megan on Klal Yisrael because he doesn't have Averis. And even if you want to say, okay, and he definitely did mitzvahs before, okay, we don't know what he was exactly, but he's free of sins, and therefore he's considered a holy being because he kept mitzvahs. Where does this come from? Where does this come from that when a person who had lived a normal life, we don't know if he was a tzaddik or not, but now that he's in a state of being a dementia, he's now a tzaddik? Because come on, he's not giving in to his Yetzer Hara. Look, and therefore he's megan on the door, a person like this. If you have to do what you do to keep him alive. He quotes Rabbi Eliyahu Baal Shem. So I found the Rabbi Eliyahu Baal Shem. And I believe, although it's a beautiful sentiment, Rav Zilberstein once again has misquoted and has made an assumption which I don't think is accurate. I'm not saying that I can't sympathize with the idea. I believe my sister, who wrote, that you do whatever you can to birth a child on Shabbos. You do whatever you can. And even though you realize that the baby probably will not live for a long time, you are Machal Shabbos for Chai Yeshua on the baby. The Marshal asked the question, Kosha, given Shiyadua Shiyomus, we know this baby's going to die. What does it help that you Machal Shabbos? He says, I did not see any reason in the Gemara. This was the Lion of Shas. This was one of the greatest Talmid Chachamim of his time. He says, I didn't see anybody explain this idea. The only thing I can think of, he says, Shlomo Lurya says, is The Svarno, it's logical that we should do it because we don't know what life is. In other words, we don't know what life is. Life is 70 years, 98 years, a month. A person, we don't know how much people are going to live. And therefore, it's such a mystery of life. Maybe that's what this person should have. Life, your Machal Shabbos for human life. For this baby, that's what the human life is. That's all life is determined by so many different factors. The mystery of what life is. That's the Marshal's answer. Rabbi Eliyahu Baal Shem, who had this book in manuscript and made sure it got printed because he felt the Marshal was so great. So Rabbi Eliyahu Baal Shem of Lewins writes, Af ani chavadaiti, that you should do what you can to save that baby. Because he says the world is built on Rav. And maybe it's 50-50. Maybe it's 50% tzaddikim, 50 rishoyim. And now this nolad zehatinok, this baby is born. This baby who you're now bringing out, who doesn't have any averus. You bring this baby out because he's a tzaddik right now. And even if had the baby lived, he would do averus. We look at it like the Gemara says, based on today, Bashiru Sham. Now, especially if it turns out that right now the percentage is more Rishoyim than Tzaddikim, so at least now he's for sure going to keep the world in balance. What are you going to do after this baby dies? That's not Akasha, because by the time you've kept this baby alive, another baby will be born. Or someone will do tshuva. I ask you, has he said that anybody who loses their mind becomes a tzaddik? He's talking about a baby who's never done averos. So Zilberstein compares a baby who's born or recently born who doesn't have an averos to a human who lived a life and lost and with an accident has now become a shota. Or become a person who doesn't have his mind working. There were a lot of averus that he might have done before. So I don't believe it's comparable. And therefore, he's now saying that any person who's in a coma, in a vegetative state, is automatically dealt with as a tzaddik. And he doesn't quote Rabbi Eliyahu Baal Shem correctly. I think there's, but he's. It's intellectually dishonest to quote the source the way he quotes it. He should have said
Right,
he was talking about a child, right? And he doesn't say all these people are Megan Alador, right? It's based on this, it's based on this possibility of this mathematical situation. Anyway, it really shows you how difficult halachic shilas need to somehow be filtered through great psychological and philosophical issues of why people are born this way. What was the purpose? What the sevel?
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you liked what you heard. If you did, please take a moment to share this or any of the many episodes available on our platform with friends in order to help grow our community. Until next time, Shalom.